Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. Esther Colonetti finds strength in vulnerability. She's the co-owner of Rev Cycle Studio, a spinning studio in McHenry Row, where she has offered high-energy, expletive-laden encouragement to spin clients since January 2014. Born in Nigeria to European parents and raised in Chile, Esther has always felt like an outsider thanks to her unique accent and challenges in school. Before she ran a spin studio, Esther was a scientist at the Smithsonian Institution, and she talked about some of the experiences that inspired her to change course, including the profound impact her father's death had on her. Esther talked about getting to the point where she could find power in that pain and teaching her spin classes from a place of love rather than anger. Esther is getting ready to open a second Rev location in Baltimore, and she talked about some of her other lofty goals. Through teaching spin classes and goal coaching, Esther has found her passion in inspiring and motivating others. Here's our conversation. Esther, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me here, Quinn.
So tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm one of those people that when you see, you kind of like wonder, you know, for one, where is that accent from? So I always get that question, and now it's kind of like a joke. I just let them guess, and they never get it right. I was born in Nigeria, in Lagos. My mom is French, and my father's Italian. And once we were born, we were there for a couple of years, and then we moved back to Europe. And then from there, we moved to South America. So yeah, the accent, you know, it's kind of hard to pinpoint because it's got a mixture of my nomad life.
What brought your European parents to Africa?
My dad left Italy for the war. He did not want to be part of it. And so he left for opportunity. He had a very poor family that they owned a restaurant in the northern part of Italy. They left Italy because of that. They wanted to make a better living. And Africa was booming at that time in the 70s. And my mother instead went to Africa when she was in Europe. She was in boarding school. And her parents were living in Africa at the moment. So they met in Nigeria just by coincidence. They lived in the same block. My dad was playing bocce balls in my mom's driveway. And my grandfather fell in love with my dad. And so he took him in as a single child. And yeah, so they helped him a lot. And that's how they met.
So how long did you live there for?
We were three. So my sister, my brother, and I'm the smallest of three. We were born there and we lived there until I was about 3 years old. And then we moved back a couple of times. My dad had a company and he went back there quite often.
And but what do you remember from that time?
The most thing that I remember being in Africa was mostly that I didn't fit in. I was the only white kid in my school. And all the kids would always ask us, you know, why you're not black. And it was my first experience of not fitting in. And it just became a joke. And I would just tell them my parents just forgot to paint us black.
And where else have you lived? You've moved around quite a bit, right?
Yeah. So we moved to Europe after my mom wanted just a better life for us. So we moved for Italy and then to France. And they didn't like living there. They just didn't feel comfortable being back in their own country. So they started looking around, and it was either China or South America, and they chose Chile. And so I moved to Chile when I was 5 years old, and that was my second opportunity of not feeling that I would fit in. I didn't know any Spanish. I was five. I was in kindergarten, going into first grade. And then luckily, first grade, you had to wear a uniform. So I thought, oh, this is fantastic. You know, I'll learn the language and I'll feel like I can fit in here. The funny part, my mom did not like the uniforms in the school. They were very, they were ugly. And so her being French with a good taste, she made our uniforms made in France. And so again, it was like me trying to rebel against her and like, no, I want to really fit in. Can I just wear the uniforms? And she would not let us. As you go, no kid of mine will wear these uniforms. So I constantly struggled as an immigrant, a foreigner. My accent has always been something that's been in the way of my life growing up. As a kid, you all you want to do is fit in. So from there, I it was hard. One was I couldn't fit in, and two, by moving so many times around, I also was a slow learner. In the household, we spoke Italian. With my grandparents who spoke French. In school, we spoke English and Spanish, and with my friends was Spanish. So I had a lot of languages to learn in a very small time, and which made me also a slow learner. While I was in school, I kept wanting to play recess, of, like any kid would, but they kept me in special classes for math and English. All my teachers kept asking my friends if they could help me with my English, because it was horrible. And I don't even know why I chose then to come to the States with my really bad English, but I did. Once I was graduated from high school, I could choose to either go to, you know, stay in Chile, go back to Europe, or go to the States. And I chose to come to the States for many different reasons. And then that was my second or my third time of having to fit in.
What languages do you speak now?
Still all of them, and all of them with an accent.
Are you thankful for that now?
I am completely thankful. I accept myself and who I am. I've worked all those kinks out of finding myself. It took a long time. I'm in love that I am not from any country and from all the countries. I'm in love that I can speak all four languages. I still carry my French passport when I go to France and I go through the immigration of France. They always look at me and they go, why is your French, you know, with an accent? And I go, well, I've lived abroad, my friend. What can I say?
Was there a place you felt when you were a kid that, like, you would have fit in? Were you always longing to go somewhere where you would have been more of, like, the norm?
Yeah, it's funny because we spent a lot of time in Europe, even when we were in Chile. All of my, you know, Christmases and vacations were always in Europe to see my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins. So when I was in Europe, I then longed to be back in Chile. And then when I was in Chile, I longed to be back in Europe. I never felt I could fit in, because once we were back in Europe, I felt like, you know, I wasn't dressed the same way my cousins were dressed, or we weren't speaking or eating the same things or watching the same cartoons, or the same jokes cannot translate culturally. So I never felt like I could belong to one place.
Were you always an athletic kid? Were you always playing sports?
So because of my learning disability, which I'm now honest that, you know, definitely I was a slow learner. So once I got the tutors helped me a lot with that, but I was always a C average kid. I never had higher grades than that. So then I was so frustrated with myself that I launched myself into fitness. So fitness for me is where I found my truest passion. I was a badass in sports as a child, and I'm a badass now in sports now. So I found my belonging in fitness.
What sports were you playing as a kid?
As a kid, well, my favorite was horseback riding. I jumped and also dressaged. I also, you know, in school, soccer and whatnot. But I do recall my mom forced us to do ballet, and I couldn't stand it. I did it for a couple of years. My sister wanted to do ballet, so we were all forced to do it. For one, I was a tomboy. Pink was not my color. Tutus were not my thing. But what it gave me discipline. It gave me structure. It gave me a knowledge that sometimes you don't have to love everything you do every second. Just know what you're doing, and then eventually it will all settle in. So now I look back that, you know, thank God they forced us to do this. Because right now, when I have to dig deep, I know that I've got the structure and the discipline to do it.
So is that how you're spending most of your free time? Like, what kinds of activities were you doing, and what kind of life does a nomadic child lead?
Well, in high school, all of my weekends were definitely around horses. We found that horses and fitness with my family just kept us kind of like in a nucleus. Like, no matter where we went, you know, we did this as a family. We all rode it. I definitely found a family away from my family in the horse barn.
And so what brought you to Baltimore?
I came to the States in 1994 for college. I wanted to be a pre-vet. I wanted to be a veterinarian. And so Colorado had one of the best schools for vet school. I went there for that. I did my 4 years, and my 2 years of pre-vet, my grades, again, affected me completely. Again, being a C average kid, for being into vet school, you needed really A's. I applied. I didn't get in, and I just said, it's okay, you know, like, what's next? And so I thought, I'll do wildlife biology instead. I'll still be with animals, but I'll work in different capacity. So I completed my undergrad in 4 years. Again, not with greatest grades, but I completed it. And I moved to Baltimore. My father killed himself on my last year of college. it was one of those moments that my whole life crushed. I felt shattered and lost. With that, I had an internship in the Patagonia of Argentina later that year. But I had 9 months of deciding what can I do between those my internship and, you know, I'm here in the States. I've got nobody. I just lost my dad. I had a boyfriend who lived in Baltimore. We met in college. And he said, you know, I should just come to Baltimore. I've never been to Baltimore. I'm like, sure, you know, I've got 9 months to kill. You know, we're in love. No problem. Came to Baltimore. And then I took a job while I was waiting for my internship to start. And then I went to Argentina. And I had an year of Argentina working with the Patagonian huemul. It's an endangered species. Looks like a red deer, but it's from that area only. You can only see it in the Patagonia. So I... at that moment was really what I needed, time alone, to refine myself. And it was great. I was doing what I wanted to do, field research, being with animals, helping, feeling that, you know, this is my path. But after being there, I realized that I really loved also the States, and I did love that man. So I came back to the States, to Baltimore. I was an F1 student yet at that time. And we moved in. We bought a house in Fells Point. That was my first home. I lived in Baltimore. And I got a letter from immigration saying that I had 90 days to leave the country legally or I could never come back. We had a house, you know, so we were in love for sure. But this made us move along in our plan. And so we got married. And I was still not healed from having lost my dad. I don't think one can ever, but one can forgive and move on. So then from being married, I took a job with the Smithsonian. I worked with them for 7 years, and I, again, did what I knew best, which was travel the world. I was now a citizen of the U.S., and I am really thankful that I'm adopted in this country. This is home. There's no other place now that I can call home. But with the Smithsonian, I took a lot of jobs in the sense of traveling. So I went to Alaska, I was in Brazil, Australia, New Zealand. There's a lot of countries that we traveled with this job. Again, was marine biologist, doing what I loved, but it required for me to be a lot of months away from home. It definitely took a toll in our marriage. And 5 years later, we divorced. That marriage gave me a huge opportunity because it gave me a chance to be someone in the sense of I became a U.S. citizen. For the first time, I chose a country. Things didn't work out for many reasons. I was lost, and I was still trying to figure out who Esther was. So I did a lot of soul searching with my job with the Smithsonian. I did a lot of drinking. I did a lot of things that I regret, but I have also forgiven myself. I did a lot of shit. There's no question. But I was lost. And that losing myself, losing my dad, the worst thing that I ever did was to lose my own self. And it wasn't until I was at the ER of University of Maryland here for 7 full days with 38 staples across my stomach that I found myself. When you lose everything, you realize that you don't lose everything until you decide when to lose yourself. And I lost my pride. But in those 7 days of the ER, I refound who I was.
What became clear to you in that time?
That people around you, you know, everybody is here to support you. You have your own legacy and your own journey. And it's truly up to yourself to love yourself. Nobody can love you if you don't love yourself. And so by me losing my dad, me feeling that I was lost, me feeling that I had no place, it was really me not feeling fully enough. We are all born awesome. When you're born, you're perfect. There's nothing wrong with you. You are a perfect human being. You should wear that shirt. You're awesome because you are. But then through moments of life, every time your awesomeness gets chipped away by things. So for me, it was not feeling grounded in the sense of not having a home, me feeling never feeling fitting in, me feeling that I always have an accent, me feeling that I wasn't good enough because I was in a special class versus being in recess. So there's all these moments that your awesomeness gets diminished. And then you realize that you are awesome. You are good enough. for me in those 7 days of the ER, it made me realize that, no, I'm still awesome.
And so what was next for you?
Next for me was definitely change a job, the job that allowed me not to move so much. So I took a job with the University of Maryland. I work in research with them. I was doing a lot of community work with Baltimore inner city kids. It was an adolescent clinic, so ages, you know, like 13 till 18, and working with kids that have HIV, working with kids that had a lot of transmittable disease. So it was a research, my research was about chlamydia, actually. So I took that job, for one, because it was local. I could just walk to work. But once I got into that job, I realized the possibility that I had to be working with young kids. And sure, it was research, but I could also help them. So for me, it was a great sense of home, belonging, and that I could do something for someone else. At the time, I was also teaching spinning, so indoor cycling. I taught at Brick Bodies, back then, and then at the Mac, and then also at Merit. And Merit was my last point of contact. I've always taught spinning since college, but with finding myself when I was teaching from a place of anger, and I was trying to release all that anger that I had inside. And once, you know, I had that that ER experience that crushed me as a person, and when I came back, I started teaching again, but this time I started teaching from a place of love. So it took me all those years of sweating shit out to be able to really find me with love and a heart. Now when I teach from a place of love. I teach from a place of sharing. As you can see, I'm sharing very vulnerably with you today as well. I am who I am. And the more vulnerable we are, the more we share ourselves, the more we are genuine with one another, the more we can touch and help others. Because I think my feeling of not feeling good enough is not just me. There's a lot of females, mostly females, that feel that way, that something has happened in our past. And if we don't release them, and we're not able to then really fully be the greatest that we are. I always say this to my class, that I'm not here to be average. I'm here to be extraordinary. And I mean those words every single time.
Has it always been easy for you to be vulnerable, or was that something that you had to work on?
Totally had to work on. When my dad, when he committed suicide, I wouldn't even tell people that he committed suicide. I just said, he just died. They go, of what? At the beginning, we, you know, as a family, we said cancer. And then we're like, we can't keep lying. Then it was, you know, depression. Well, yeah, he was a depressed man. He was depressed since I was, you know, 15 or even further. We just noticed it when he was at that age, when I was 16. He wouldn't eat. He wouldn't, you know, he was definitely very depressed. He had his ups and downs. But when he killed himself, he was very, very lost.
What was teaching spinning like for you? What was the first time like for you?
Oh my gosh. Day one, fell in love with it ASAP. So in college, I started teaching group fitness classes because I was a F1 student. You can only work inside the campus and so I was in Colorado State University. I was working out. I always worked out. So I was like, well yeah, why not get paid to work out? And so I worked in the rec center, and then I started teaching. Then it was group fitness back there. So it was like aerobics, grapevines and knee ups, all the old fashioned, you know, neotards, all that stuff. Then it was kickboxing. And then when I came to Maryland, I started working at Brick Bodies, you know, teaching classes there. And then they taught me how to teach spin class. So we'll be forever grateful for Brick Bodies. So I started teaching with them spin, and it was love at first sight. I just love be able to move and sweat and have a out-of-the-body experience on a spin bike. The rooms are dark. You're really able to just have that yoga feel, but with cardio, and I'm a cardio junkie.
So take me to from the point of leaving your job at Maryland to opening your own cycle studio.
I need to say this, that for me, the reason why right now Rev is so successful, and the reason why I even open Rev, is because of a company. I was working at University of Maryland teaching classes at Merit at that point. And Lululemon discovered me. I didn't even know what Lululemon was. Someone said it's a clothing apparel. I go, okay, you know, I was, you know, Nike and Brooks, whatever. I didn't really, you know, whatever I had to wear. And then I stopped into Lululemon one day, and I was like, wow, this stuff is really good. You know, their pants, you know, they really lift up your ass, and the tops are really make your boobs bigger. And I was like, oh, this is fantastic. They wanted me to be an ambassador for them, and I was like, I don't know what that means. this sounds very confusing. I don't know what this all means. And the more they talked about it, the more I got to learn about Lululemon. They made me an ambassador. After a couple of months, I said yes. It took me, I'm someone that doesn't just jump in because it's something that everybody says, oh, it's cool, do it. I like to do my research. I like to understand what am I doing and what's involved and what is the company. I have someone that have very strong core values that if your company is not meshing with my core values, I'm not going to just jump in. And Lululemon is exactly what I needed at that point. Their ambassadorship gave me goal coaching. So through goal coaching, I was able to see my fullest potential, a 5-year plan, a 10-year plan. And believe it or not, when I did their goal coaching, I had written down that I wanted to own my cycle studio. And they were like, why 10 years, Esther? Why are you going to wait? You should do this like now. And I go, I don't know. Who am I to open a cycle studio in Baltimore? You know, I don't have the money. I don't know if I never owned a business. I don't know if I can do this. And they were like, all those fears that are holding you back from being your greatest. And it was through them that I was able to then write my goals down, our 1-year, our 5-year goal. And I started to vocalize to the universe that I wanted to open this cycle studio. You know, and I'm not one of those people like, you know, the universe will provide. And, you know, back then I was like a little bit like, no way. Money doesn't grow on trees. But someone said, you know, the more you talk, the more you express, you might find people that are wanting to support you. So I did just that. I started vocalizing me wanting to open a spin studio, and I found my business partner that way. And then we started talking about it because he also wanted to open a business. He just didn't know in what, but he was also a fitness passionate person. And one thing led to the other. And a couple of years later, my business partner and I, we actually opened RevCycle Studio. So it does happen if you are trusting the universe that you must share what you really want in life in order to live the life that you love.
How did you know that it was a spinning studio you wanted to open? Like, was that when you were the happiest, or how did you come to that realization?
Yeah, for me, there's no question that it was going to be a spinning studio. Like, for me, spinning, when I'm teaching a class, when I'm in that podium, when I'm leading a group of people through sweat, is when I really find myself the happiest. There is something so special. There's a connection of vulnerability in 45 to 60 minutes with that audience. They're there. They're following you. They're trusting you. They're giving you 110% or more. They're to the point that they're feeling that they're going to faint. They have no more air, yet they're there pushing. They're trusting you. So for me, when I'm teaching, I feel, for me, my greatness, I feel very successful because I see results in my clients and then come back. I mean, I'm talking to you here without profanity, but when I'm teaching, I'm not yelling at them, but I am calling them names. I am telling them that they can do more. I am telling them that they have not reached their limits yet. I'm one of those people that, you know, will go in class and will throw their water bottles to the floor and say, you're not drinking today in 45 minutes. You know, when you just test your limits, you can do it. You're not going to die here. You've never going to experience more from potentially frustration to high to lows in my class. You're just going to give me all you've got.
And have you had people in your life pushing you in that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. From my parents, you know, I mentioned that we rode horses. With my parents, my parents had a way of being parents, the best that they could, but they never really appraised us. I never heard my mom say, I love you, or she does say now, or never heard my mom say, good job. It was more like, oh, good, you won first place. Well, here's what you did wrong. So I was always, we were constantly being pushed. And it's fine. That's the way that they chose to raise us. And it has created a lot of it on me that I also push myself. Right now I'm doing a full Ironman. It's crazy. It's impossible. I'm hurting. Yeah, you know, but I want to do it, not because I know that I can do it, but I want to see how good can I do it. You know, it's just like never settle. Always go for the always push yourself to your boundaries.
Rev has been open for about 2.5 years now. Tell me what it was like in the beginning and what surprised you about running your own business and what were some of the challenges?
Well, when we opened Rev, the first day was January 1st, 2014. we thought we were going to be open a while before, but, you know, with construction and all that, it really slowed down.
Plus, that's the New Year's resolution day, right?
Yeah.
Perfect for gyms.
It was perfect. Day one we opened, it has been and will have been, and I'm sure it will be, highest moment of my life. Tears, gratitude, love, just like when you're on the top of a mountain and you're like, yes, I did it. That's how it felt. The struggle, well, once you open the studio, there's no blinking of an eye. It's a lot of work. Still is a lot of work. The first 3 months were, like a blur. I can't even tell you what happened. We were constantly working. I would wake up at 3 a.m. just like, oh my gosh, I got to get things done. My to-do list never went empty. Eating, sleeping were second. Yeah, my friends definitely brought food to Rev, make sure that I was eating. My husband kept telling me, please eat, please sleep, don't work so much. When you throw yourself into something that you really love, all wholeheartedly, you throw yourself with all of it. And that's what I did. I threw myself into Rev. Though the first 6 months, once we've had opened, I did look at my husband. I go, wow, if this is what it is to live your life in a dream, you know, like this was my dream. I go, I don't know if I want to live my life in my dream. It's a lot of work. It's hard work. Of course, I'm very grateful, very happy. But it's not to be taken lightly. Having a business, it gives you freedom, but it also traps you down. But for me, this is what I love. For me to be teaching, it's a gift. It's a gift that I give to my clients every day. And it is my happiest moment of my day when I teach.
Yeah, I was wondering, with fitness and with spinning as your release, is there any downside that comes to your release from life becoming your life or becoming your work and what you have to depend on for an income?
Yeah, great question. I was worried too about that. And what I've done, because when you teach, you're giving yourself away, you know, as I mentioned, being vulnerable and being there for your clients. Everybody wants a piece of you. You also need to restore yourself. So part of loving yourself, if you are always giving, you have to then give love back to yourself. So we call that, you know, I call that self-love. And that's moments for myself. I do meditation. I do my own yoga practice. I'm a yoga certified instructor. I thought that I was going to then teach that at Rev, but I realized that for me, it was too much. You know, you give yourself in spinning and then yoga. It was too much for me emotionally. But now I practice yoga on my own in my own house. I sometimes, like pedicures and manicures, like you just give yourself time away from people. Also, I run and I don't do it with people. I run alone. It's my moment of me time. So you definitely need to find boundaries that you need to self-care yourself.
Have there been any like hallmarks or transformative moments for you since opening Rev? Any particular moments with clients or special times that stand out to you?
Well, for sure, teaching every new year is it's such a high for me. Teaching my first charity class at Rev with my husband. We've been raising money for MS for now 12 years. And we taught it at Merit, this class called Endure, and to teach it at Rev, that was a high for both of us. I think we were both in tears. Having my mother come to my first spin class at Rev, that was a very much of a high moment. I'm going to have my sister with me this year for Christmas. She's coming to see us. She lives in Australia. So having her come to, she's never seen Rev. You know, 2.5 years she hasn't been here, but she'll be here for when we open our second studio as well. So that's going to be a high moment, I'm sure. There's some classes that you feel like, wow, that, you know, the music was great, the energy was great. But I think those key moments have been the highlight.
You mentioned your time in the emergency room. Have there been any other moments in your life that you felt were kind of a turning point or where your path became clearer to you?
I think for sure doing the goal coaching with Lululemon was one of those turning points. It was such a turning point for me that it transformed my life for sure, because I wouldn't be here right now even with you speaking about Rev. It was so transformative that I actually now lead my own goal coaching. I felt like if I took this from Lululemon, it created me. It helped me see my future. It helped me live a life that I love, that I wanted to then take it to everybody. So I lead goal coaching workshops so I can give what I was given to me to everybody else that wants to do it.
So in your day-to-day life, what is your greatest motivation? Is it impressing yourself, impressing your parents? Like, what makes you wake up and want to just go out and kill it?
I have a legacy that I want to fulfill. And when the alarm goes off, sure, I'm not going to be jumping off my bed and doing a push-up, but I'm waking up and I'm like, fuck, this life is good. I'm here. I'm here. I'm alive. And I'm not going to waste any second being lazy, being, you know, I just want to go out there and really crush it. And what is crushing it is just feeling happy, feeling in love with yourself, feeling that you love, that you can give everything you can to everybody, that isn't that you can motivate people, inspire people. If I can do that every day, I'm happy.
What advice would you give a young person wanting to start their own business or go after their passion?
Do it. Don't wait. I'm 40 and I opened my studio 2.5 years ago. I wish I would have had the balls to have opened my studio when I was in my 30s or 20s. You know, fear held me back. And so to that young person, I would say, look at your past. What holds you back? Face it. Learn from it. So then your weakness becomes your strength. And then you can then go out and tear this up.
Do you think you could have done it in your 20s or 30s? Like, it's obviously, you know, I think we all wish we were doing things we loved for more time in our life. But is there anything, you know, you had to get to by this age that maybe you wouldn't have had, you know, when you were like 25?
Yeah, I'm grateful that I did what I did when I did it. Could I have opened it when I was younger? Oof, I would have been so immature. I would have made so many mistakes. Potentially, the business would have failed. So I'm glad that it happened when it happened. Maturity-wise, in my 20s, I was so lost. It would have not been a good, not good for me, not good for my clients that come to Rev. I would have not given them what they need. It's only now that I can give them what they need because I teach from a place of love versus hate.
Have you felt that with the business you have made any mistakes yet?
Yeah, we constantly go, oops. Yeah, there's a lot of little regrets here and there. But you have to then forgive and you have to apologize and you have to just move forward. Staying back is just going to hold you back. But you have to also find clearance with the people that you affect.
And how have you found the business side to be? Is that a part of this endeavor that you've enjoyed or that has come naturally to you? Or is that more challenging?
I actually have enjoyed it. You know, watching my dad running his own business. He had a couple. Being an entrepreneur, I really have enjoyed that feeling, that task. The day-to-day operations, not so much like, you know, when we're out of toilet or paper or when we're out of wipes, you know, like that doesn't interest me, the running of the everyday. But in, you know, creating events or how to promote something, what are we going to do as a new challenge? Who are we bringing in as a guest teacher? Like that type of thing. I lead all the instructor training. So for example, Rev, all the teachers that you have at Rev have been trained by me. I created a manual in the first year that we opened Rev. So that was a huge task. That was one of my big goals that I wanted when I opened Rev, was to train new instructors. And that was a huge accomplishment. And for me, I still feel the first group that I trained, you know, now we have four generations of teachers that I've trained. But the first one, I know who they are. They have a special spot in my heart. I felt so excited on day one of our training. It's a three-day training. So for me, that was a huge accomplishment.
Do you still have any of your nomadic tendencies, and do you find yourself like wanting to pick up and move ever?
Yeah, for sure. My goal 10 years from now is to be living in two countries, maybe three. So it's to have a small little studio in Paris, somewhere downtown, that I can go running every morning from a little studio flat and have my croissant and my café au lait. And then, yeah, maybe have my other place would be in French Polynesia. As you can see, I'm going back to my roots. And I have a wellness center in French Polynesia. You know, my husband and I went there for our honeymoon and we both fell in love with this little island called, I'm not going to say it.
Keep
some secrets. But yeah, so live part of our lives back and forward and just leading retreats for people to come and lead goal coaching still when I'm 10 years from now, I'll be 50.
Was there ever a point when you felt like, I've done it, like I've accomplished my goal, this is it? Or Or what will it take to get to that point if you haven't yet?
I'm someone that always likes to have a lot of goals. You know, I go back to my goals and I recreate them every year. I what Lululemon taught me, I do it every year now. So right now, my next goal, you know, we're opening Rev number 2 in Canton. Going to be opening this December, mid-December. That will be the second studio. That for me will be a huge success because it means that Rev 1 was successful, that we made it. And having 2 studios, that's huge. It talks volume of your business plan. Goal 3 is to have a 3rd one and a 4th one. In the same time, my own personal goal is to have my own brand. All my focus has been to Rev the past 2.5 years, and I need to now start working on my own personal brand. So that's my next goal. I don't feel like I will ever feel like, yes, I made it. My life doesn't have an end. I always tell this to my class, there's no finish line. Rev will not have a finish line until we, you know, one day, you know, we always look at SoulCycle, how they've done it when they sold their, you know, like, I think that's successful. So we always try to see, well, how can we also sell Rev one day to be successful, how they've done it. So that would be, I wouldn't call that a end of a race, because then, you know, you invest that money in something else. My end of my race is when I'm dead, you know, when I'm dead, but then my legacy will still be here.
And what do you hope you're remembered for, and what do you hope that legacy looks like in a more abstract sense?
That I'll be able to influence as many people as I'm able to worldwide, that I lead goal coaching throughout the world, not just in Baltimore, that I get asked to go to Italy or Australia to lead goal coaching workshops, and that I'm able to affect so many people that when I'm no longer here, I've helped many more females, men, succeed and live the life they love. That for me will be a legacy.
What do you think you excel at?
Motivation. For sure. To inspire people. I always tell when I goal coach, you know, we all have to have our I am, and my I am is I'm an intense force of inspiration for my community.
And would you like to send us out with some intense inspiration?
You're going to be blipping me all the way through it. But here it is. No, I can't even say it.
We need to get on the spin bike for that.
Dark room. But no, just never give up. Never give up. There's a saying from the Navy SEALs, you know, 40%, that whenever you feel like quitting, know that you've only given me 40%. So when you're about to quit, don't you dare, because you still have 40 more percent to go.
Well, Esther, thanks so much for coming in.
You're very welcome. Shanika, she a dope girl. Roxanne, she a dope
girl. TT, she a dope girl, dope girl. Thanks for listening to another episode of Female Trouble, a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. We're back with a new episode every Tuesday. And as always, you can find us at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble and soundcloud.com/femaletrouble. If you listen in the Apple Podcast app, it would help us out if you subscribed and gave us a rating. We're also on the other major podcast apps like Google Play and Stitcher. You can follow us on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring TT the artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.